with Kevin Miller in the Morning is brought to you by Tway Travel, your adventure travel specialists. Fighting for America.
The one, the only, John Rich.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're so fired up that you're coming to the Idaho Center.
It's been a while since we've been up in your neck of the woods, so we're rolling into town to come give you guys a big and rich time, man. It's been too long.
Fighting for Idaho.
We got this little thing called the American Dream. Everybody should go for the biggest and best thing that they want to go for. We live in a country that lets us go for it. Don't be lazy. If you're an American, don't be lazy. Go for it.
Fighting for you.
You were always kind to me and treated me with respect, so I'm glad to hear you're out there and doing well. The folks out there now get to listen to you, so good for y'all listening.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning.
You've got a real rock star on your hands.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And don't forget, Big and Rich in town tonight. We'll be out there as well. Stop by. We'll be there from 3 to 6 at the Idaho Center Amphitheater. Looking forward to seeing so many folks and enjoying a great show. Great way to kick off the weekend. We're joined by our great friend, Ken Ivory of the American Lands Council. Ken, also a state representative in Utah. Ken, good morning.
Hey, Kevin. Good morning. How you doing?
Not bad. Your thoughts before we get rolling on the life and times of Joan Rivers.
You know, she was pretty amazing. Doesn't that take you back to some pretty amazing times? Johnny Carson, and, you know, I guess she had some falling out with him, but Don Rickles and all the rest. It goes back to a time when it kind of felt like America was America.
Well, yeah, and the idea that comedy wasn't always using bad language.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
It was, a cerebral event, if you will.
Indeed. She was one of a kind.
Yes, and I was about ready to say indeed, but that would be like 27 times redundancy. But anyway, let's roll along here. Ken, what's the latest with the return of the Western Lands?
Well, Kevin, it starts out with some very, very simple principles. You think about is access to our public lands over the last 30 years better or worse? Health of our public lands over the last 30 years, better or worse? And then productivity on our public lands, is it better over the last 30 years or worse? We all know the answers to those questions. It's not even a close call. Access, health, productivity, lose, lose, lose under federal management all the way across the board. And yet when you have state-managed lands, Congress House Natural Resources Committee, get this, said that Idaho, the state of Idaho, on the forested lands managed by the state of Idaho, they're only, Kevin, 917 times more effective at generating revenue per acre than the U.S. Forest Service.
Wow.
So here's the latest, okay?
I'm sorry, Ken, at 580 KIDO, I'm just amazed, and we'll go over the numbers, just how much land in the West the feds own. And you take a look at Nevada, it's just insane. But I'm sorry, continue.
And it's a good point, because what you have happening is you've got a bunch of groups that are tremendously invested in the problem. You've got these groups, I won't call them environmental groups, they're more eco-obstructionist groups. They're invested in suing the federal government because they get paid taxpayer dollars to sue the federal government for its mismanagement. But then when you bring up real solutions, they don't even want to debate or discuss them, right? They'll say things like, "Oh, you just can't afford to manage your land, so we can't even discuss this." Well, Idaho only generates 917 times more revenue per acre than the U.S. Forest Service. You go to Priest Lake, one side of the lake, dead, burned, terrible from federal management, and it's not the guys on the ground, Kevin. The guys on the ground, most of them want to do their job. They want to do a great job. They studied their lives to tend and care for the forest. But the policies and the management by litigation ties their hands from Washington. They can't take care of the land on the ground. And then the other side of Priest Lake, state managed, right? You got, it's just night and day stark difference. I actually was on the plane coming back from a conference in Dallas, and I have the last seat on the plane open as the door's about to close, and I think, I had an extra bag. I got an award. I got a National Legislator of the Year award.
You,
right?
From our friends at ALEC. I know them well.
Correct. And so I've got this award sitting in the seat next to me because it won't fit above or under. And they're just about to close the door, and a guy comes in. So it's obvious he's going to sit next to me. As he's coming down the aisle, he's got a shirt on that says U.S. Forest Service. I said, wow, this could be an interesting three-hour discussion. And he sits down, and I said, hey, so where are you going? He says, yeah, I'm going to Oregon. Where are you coming from? Well, I'm coming from Louisiana. Wow, how often are you going to Oregon? I'm going every week, every summer. How come? Going to fight fires. How come there's so many fires that you've got to come from Louisiana every week, every summer to fight the fires? And Kevin, he took a deep breath and he unloaded for 3 hours nonstop. He says, oh my gosh, there is no common sense anymore. He says, we can't manage the forest in the West. He says, in Louisiana, in my forest, I've got this special law where I get to thin the trees. I get to go out and get people to come in and harvest timber, and we have a productive community, and we've got health of the forest and productivity. And man, he went on for 3 hours just talking about, you don't tend the garden, you've got more fuel, you know, more trees equals more fuel equals more fire equals more dead animals equals more lost watershed. And he went on for 3 hours just unburdening himself. So, I mean, that's what we're facing, right? You see the haze all over this summer yet again. We're going to burn another 5, 6, 7 million acres. You know, I guess the fires will stop when they run out of forest to burn. What a tragedy that our children may never know what a forest looked like. But more critically, that's our watershed. And it's going away at the clip of about 5 to 7 million acres a year. Record-setting fires. It doesn't have to be like this. Under state management, you look at win-win-win. More access, better health, greater productivity on the land. So some of the things that are happening now in Utah, we just constituted our commission on the stewardship of public lands. And Kevin, we appropriated $2 million to begin building the legal case. We just had a meeting a couple weeks ago with our governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, the members of Congress themselves and their staff, counties, House and Senate members, to start coordinating on moving forward on the transfer of public lands. And our governor laid it out. He said, look, it's a four-step process. Education, got to get people to know these basic facts. Negotiation, we're willing to sit down at the table with anybody and put the facts, put the information on the table. Let's have a reasonable, rational discussion about this, because it's a problem. It's a problem at the federal level. Let's start talking about real solutions. Litigation or legislation, and start working on legislation. In fact, he turned to our members of Congress and said, you start working on legislation nationally so we can start driving this. And then if they won't negotiate and work with us on legislation, we start preparing the complaint immediately for litigation. Now, we'll determine what circumstances, when or if we file the litigation, because let's start getting the complaint ready immediately. So that's happening as we go forward. I'm down in Arizona as we speak, meeting with a number of folks down here. They have the same situation that we all have in the West. We have been discriminated against in the West. You've seen that red and white map.
Right.
It's as if Congress somehow decided they have the authority to create a full class of states, and then in the West, a back-of-the-bus class of states. Well, that's just antithetical to our very system of government.
Ken Ivory joining us from the American Lands Council. Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. You know, in our gubernatorial debate, we had the governor, Governor Otter, saying, hey, I've tried. I've given it my best shot. I don't see it happening. Good luck to anybody else who wants to try. What would you say to his comment? How would you react to that?
Well, the status quo is comfortable for people. It takes a while to really understand how to move forward on this and where you go with this. This is a big, big, big subject, a big story. It's a big issue. When it happened before, you had in fact, we learned just something really, really interesting recently, Kevin. Thomas Hart Benton was the Democratic senator from Missouri back in the 1840s and 50s when Indiana and Illinois and Missouri and Arkansas and all the way down to Florida, they were 90% federally controlled for decades, And their complaints to Congress, get this, we can't educate our children. You're controlling all our land. We can't grow our economy. You're controlling all our land. You're not keeping the promise to transfer our land. You're hoarding all of the minerals in our state that would allow us to be self-reliant and govern ourselves. I mean, this was Illinois and Florida. Florida, in fact, said we're the worst off of all the Western states, right, complaining to Congress. 90% federally controlled for decades. One man stands up and he says, I went to battle for, not against anyone or anything, I went to battle for changing the system of disposing of the public lands. He says, I resolved to move against that whole system.
Right.
He says, I did it in a bill, but I went out and educated the public. And guess what, Kevin? He succeeded. Illinois is not 90% federally controlled. Florida is not 90% federally controlled. And I just got a book off of eBay just a couple of weeks ago. It's a biography on Thomas Hart Benton written by Teddy Roosevelt. And Teddy Roosevelt says, Thomas Hart Benton deserves praise for his relentless effort to dispose of the public lands. And his views on the disposal of the public lands were the correct one.
Ken Irie with us as we continue on here at 580KIDO. We take a look at fire season. Knock on wood, it hasn't been as bad as it's been in previous summers yet. As you've said, we're talking watershed, we're talking forests. Could there be a day, as you talked about earlier, where one day we just won't have the lands because they'll all be burned out?
Well, sitting here in Arizona, they had a fire about 13 years ago, the Rodeo Chitisky fire. Burned like a 500,000 acres. Kevin, it's still a moonscape today. It's still a moonscape. So over the last decade, we've burned about estimates are somewhere well north of 100 million animals. We don't talk about that very often. I've got photos from the sheep fire that you had in Idaho. Elk, bighorn sheep, all kinds of other animals just burned sitting in there. They don't show those images. That's happening. We burn millions of animals in these fires. But critically, when you have no ground cover, then it becomes, the Forest Service guy explained it to me, then it becomes like saran wrap when the rain hits, and it just washes everything off down into the rivers. In fact, Commissioner Schmellick up there said that from the sheep fire that they had, they're now losing all the fisheries because the silt is washing down, and so you've got protected species of fish, killing them. It's destroying the habitat. But it's not just a temporary thing. Fire can be very good. Catastrophic fire that takes the whole tree, the crown, all the way down, just takes everything out. That takes away the habitat, takes away the watershed, takes away any productivity. And then get this, rather than tend the forest, rather than harvest out and thin the forest, where you actually get productivity out of it, the policies that they have just want to watch the forest burn and go up in and pollute the atmosphere. It really just makes no sense at all.
We're going to make more sense with our friend Ken Irie from the American Lands Council, Kevin Miller in the morning. Time for traffic at 580KIDO. Good morning, Dave.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, Ken Irie with us from the American Lands Council. 580KIDO, phone numbers 580-5436, Kevin at KIDOAM.com. So, Ken, we talk about government officials. Oh, by the way, nice picture of you with the picture of Obama there on Facebook shaking your fist at him.
You know, the funny thing that was so funny about that was at the Arizona GOP headquarters. I just thought that was amusing. I had to get a picture of that.
Do we have any allies in the East?
Yes, in fact. South Carolina did a resolution supporting the transfer of public lands to the West. Many legislators in states east of Colorado are working on sponsoring similar resolutions this year. Significantly, Kevin, the National Association of Counties just added to their platform the support and calling for the transfer of public lands, as has the American Farm Bureau. I just did a national call-in show. The young farmers and ranchers of the American Farm Bureau, they do an annual kind of a debate contest. And so I had a national call-in where transfer of public lands is one of their three or four top issues that they filter through and select to have these young farmers and ranchers debate. Because, Kevin, people are beyond their threshold point on this. and kind of like the Bundy situation, they don't know where to turn. And so if we don't have constitutional outlets for this beyond frustration, their life and their livelihood is going away. With the water issues and the control of the land issues. I'll give you an example. In Utah, grazing over the last 30 years has gone from 5.5 million AUMs, animal pairs. They call it an animal unit month. It's gone from 5.5 animal unit months down to 1.2 million. And it's going away from that. That's our food, but it's not only our food. Our director of agriculture calls them firefighting cows. They get out on the range and in the forest, and they eat the forage, which reduces the fuel for even greater fire. She actually has a photo, Kevin. This is great. I'll have to get this to you so you can post it. They have a photo where picture a barbed wire fence running from the foreground to the horizon on the photo,
right.
Straight line. One side of the fence, green and lush. The other side of the fence, barren and burned out. The barbed wire fence stopped the fire. Because it was grazed, the fuel was down on the left side where it was federally managed land. It's just gone. On the right side where it had been grazed down, it's still lush and good. There was no fuel when the fire came through.
Amazing when you think just this little common sense could make a big difference in saving the lands. Let's get back to Nevada for a minute. What is it, 93% of the land is owned by the feds there?
It's about 85, right?
Okay.
I mean, so 85%. How do you fund education? How do you fund the pensions and the health and human services and transportation? What ends up happening is your state becomes about 50% dependent. 50% of the state revenue is federally sourced funds that the Government Accountability Office every single year in its consolidated financial statement says is unsustainable. It's going away. And so, you know, as states and as state leaders, this isn't just about grabbing a pitchfork and saying, you know, we want to take it to the feds. No, there's a big problem. Our federal government, as if we didn't know, has a big, tremendous problem on many facets, public land management just being one that's really affecting our lives and livelihoods. And so as state leaders, we have a duty to stand up and protect the health, the safety, the welfare of our people, because like we talked about at the beginning, access going away. Health of the lands, devastated. Productivity, absolutely depressed on the public lands. We've got a duty, both for us and for our nation, to get back to that point where it's win-win-win, where we have access, we have health on our lands, and productivity.
Indeed. And do you think if there's a Republican in office, will it make a difference when we're talking about the presidency?
Well, yes, of course, but... it's the people and it's the leaders from the states up that are really going to make the difference. And so one of the things that your listeners can do right now, call your state, your local state and national representatives, call them, email them, write them, send your carrier pigeon out to them and encourage them to be the modern day Thomas Hart Benton, to be that Democratic senator from Missouri. Who said, I went to battle for, not against anyone or anything, battling for liberty, property, and self-governance. And he succeeded. And so, you know, call your leaders and say, you know, are you up to speed with what's happening? Have you been to the American Lands Council website? Do you know the simple path forward on this? The promises at statehood were the same. It's already been done. It's the only solution big enough. And then the other thing they can do is, you know, get on the AmericanLandsCouncil.org website, but then like the Facebook page, but call and encourage your leaders. And so Governor Otter, I mean, it takes a while to come to understand.
Well, what would you like to say to Governor Otter? Because all kidding aside, he does listen every day. You're talking you're talking to him right now.
Well, great. Governor Otter, you know, get with our people that we're working with. You've got some folks, in fact, the Attorney General now, Attorney General Wasden, has just commissioned a task force, a study group with the Western Attorneys General to begin looking at the legal analysis on the transfer of public lands. And as I understand it, I haven't talked to him directly for quite a while, but as I understand, he's the one that kind of came up with this argument that's that's a bit different than what we've come from in Utah. And he said, look, the federal government has no authority to discriminate, to treat states differently. Their fundamental duty was equal footing. And so you have no authority to say, hey, you states in the West, think about this, Kevin. Idaho is probably 4, 5, 6, 7 times the size of pick a state in the East, New Hampshire, Connecticut, Ohio. And yet your representation in the halls of Congress, your power in the electoral vote is a fraction of theirs, because you've been put on a political reservation, if you will. You'll never have the self-determination in the very nature of our political system, because the federal government has arbitrarily said, we're going to treat you as a different class of state. A number of Supreme Court cases say they absolutely do not have the authority to do that. So best thing you can do right now, call these guys, encourage them to understand this has already been done before. You know, that's information that we just simply didn't have, a couple of years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. This has already been done before, and the promises at stake are the same. What we got when I was in, I've been in a number of debates on this, law professors, political science professors and whatnot, and when you ask that simple question, hey, guys, that map, it's very clear. There's a very distinct difference. Can you tell me why the difference? Why does the federal government control more than 50% of all the land in the western United States? You know what the number one answer until about a year ago has been?
What's that?
Your land is arid. Therefore, the federal government keeps it.
I see.
Right? I mean, but we haven't been asking that question to know that these answers are, quite frankly, ridiculous. The second answer that they come up with is, there are six words that they cherry pick, six words out of the Enabling Act, or in Idaho's case, the Act of Admission, which got incorporated in your state constitution. Six words, and they say, forever disclaim right and title. And they say, oh, you see that? You just gave up your land. Think about the argument. Founders of Idaho did not understand the value of liberty, property, and self-governance, and they gave up their land for the privilege of becoming a state. That's the argument. Does that make any sense at all?
No, but Ken, we appreciate it. We've got to run. Thank you.
All right, Kevin. Hey, thanks for all you're doing. Privilege to be on with you, and call your leaders and encourage them to be the modern-day Thomas Hart Benton.
Ken Ivory, American Lands Council, until we meet again. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Kevin.
There we have it. Ken Ivory with us. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
On Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Hey, Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. We go to the wounded Packer, our boy Jeff Manasso from Fox News Radio. Good morning, sir.
Seattle looks really good, and they look like they're going back to the Super Bowl.
I felt your pain, brother. I thought the first quarter, you guys were hanging, but... Boy, it's tough with that 12th man. It's tough with that talent. I don't know if I've seen anything like that.
You know, when you start watching a football game and then you end by watching a Joan Rivers documentary on your tablet while the game's on mute, that it's probably a bad game.
Indeed, even though Aaron Rodgers looked good and everything else, and just amazing.
Seattle just looked better. And they look like a great team, and man, we'll see. Russell Wilson is an incredible quarterback, and we'll see. It's early, but if we keep seeing this kind of performance out of Seattle, man, they are going to be a team to beat.
Yeah, and just one more time here on the Seattle thing. I don't, I was talking about this earlier at 580 KIDO. I just don't think I've ever seen a team that young, that composed. Where the fans are promoted just as much as the team, where you have this flag for the fans. I mean, you have the 12th man at Texas A&M, but nothing like what we've saw last night.
Well, you should come to Lambeau Field, my friend. The next time, you're a Broncos fan, right?
No, I'm a Patriot.
Okay. Well, the next time your team plays ours, man, we should get together at Lambeau Field. You'll see what kind of. I'm not going to rub it in, but I think that Green Bay has some of the best fans in the world.
Well, like I said, where do we go from that? We're going to go to unions and teachers in Michigan, but a lousy segue, but we'd rather much talk about football. But apparently now in this landmark decision, teachers can get out of the union?
Well, this was a case in Michigan where the Mackinac Center Legal Foundation and other right-to-work groups filed a lawsuit against Michigan's largest the state's largest union, the MEA, and essentially saying, well, first of all, Michigan's right to work law was implemented a year ago, and since then, teachers began opting out. During the opt-out period, which was a month-long period in August, but many of them, thousands of them, just stopped paying dues, saying, okay, well, it's right to work. I don't have to pay these dues anymore. Well, in many cases, teachers reported being harassed by the union, showing up at their homes, asking for money, asking for credit cards, sending them to collections. So they sued. And a judge, essentially, an administrative law judge, essentially said, based on the state's law, the right to work law, that these teachers can opt out at any time. Now, we have not heard from the MEA, and they do expect to appeal. We expect them to appeal to the state's high court at some point. So this is a case that could draw out over a couple of years. The state's employment commission is expected to sign off on this ruling, essentially clearing the way for teachers just to opt out. But the judge also said that that she didn't believe that that the teachers union necessarily had a right to keep teachers up to speed. That okay, look, your opt out period is coming. She didn't believe that they had to. So I guess that's a win for them. But at the same time, we've seen cases like this happen before, in Indiana, in Wisconsin, where now public workers, public union workers are dropping like flies off of the union rolls.
Indeed. Jeff Manasa with us here at 580KIDO. You wonder, there are so many right-to-work states, but teachers' unions, other unions are just so powerful, and they are effective at lobbying to make sure that they get their agenda across. You wonder what their reaction will be.
Well, the union look to Wisconsin. You saw the reaction in Wisconsin when Governor Scott Walker went after the state's public union in Act 10. It was the reaction was fierce, and we saw tens of thousands of union workers and officials coming from out of state to protest, to picket. And it was a big deal. So we expect some fierce action, union, because when you boil it down, Kevin, it's all about the dollars. And without the dollars, the union is powerless. So if 1.5 or about 1% of active members left in 2013 in Michigan, about another 8,000 stopped paying dues last year, a total of 112,000 active members. So you've got a little over 1% of the active, a little over 10% of the active members that have dropped in just a year. That's significant. And so now with this right to work ruling with this judge saying, like, you don't have to pay your dues anymore. You can just leave. It's going to be interesting to see how many teachers, how many public employees stick around and keep paying these dues. We saw in places like Wisconsin where they're not sticking around and the union is losing some steam.
Well, Wisconsin, that's ground zero for all this with Governor Brown, and we'll see how that plays out. Jeff Manasso, any other predictions for this weekend?
No, it's just going to be a good weekend, and I hope you have a great one as well.
All right, Jeff, take care.
You bet.
All right, our great friend Jeff Manasso here. Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Coming up, we're going to take a look at, well, really what happens when you bring a gun to school. By the way, you're going to love this now, dear true believer. The folks at Boise State have announced that there's going to be a lot of delays. Going to be long lines. Long lines at Broncos Stadium or Albertson Stadium. Well, Broncos Stadium. This weekend. What? because there's going to be a lot of metal detectors. And the folks at Boise State just want to make sure that you know that there are going to be a lot of delays because of a lot of metal detectors and a lot of searching going on because of all those folks that are just have a zeal to go to a Bronco game and carry a firearm. Now, never mind that you have people within the educational community, in my opinion, that have had their feelings hurt because campus carry passed. And the folks at Boise State encourage you to bring your stuff like in clear containers, and you'll be searched, and you'll go through a metal detector. And they just want you to know, you know, these changes are because of heightened security, because of the campus carry legislation. Now, again, and I remember it was falsely reported by an opinion writer in the paper that campus carry would encourage people to carry a firearm into a Bronco game, as if that hasn't happened before. Now, campus carry does not allow you to carry a firearm into Taco Bell Arena because Elton John had a problem with that. Remember the last time this bill was put up and then shot down? No pun intended. Well, now, if you're going to the game, and let's face it, win, lose, or draw, it's fun to go to games. But do you really believe it's necessary at 580-5436? And maybe because we, you know, we have our house attorney now, Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, and we live in the gilded age of litigation, this is a move by the university to protect themselves from any perceived threat. When we're thinking about people in Idaho carrying weapons into the stadium, do you believe that they have your safety interests at hand, or is this just another way of sticking it to folks who carry guns? Again, I don't know if the metal detectors are necessary, considering we didn't have them before. Why should we have them now? And we'll talk about that ISU professor that literally shot himself in the foot. And remembering Joan Rivers. A lot going on here today. Thank you for joining us. Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Let's get you to work.
And back, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
I'm married 9 years. We still play catch me, but we walk. You know, it's catch me. Can I catch you tomorrow? Sure. Tomorrow's even better. I'll know in advance. I'll take a bath. What the heck?
There we have it, Joan Rivers. It's amazing, though, what comedians can do, what entertainers can do, and how that fuels the news cycle. Kevin Miller with you here. And if you have a funny moment that you'd like to share with us about Joan Rivers, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Kevin Miller, again, with you as we move along. So we have the death of Joan Rivers. How will she be remembered? Well, we have so many people that now do comedy, and they list Joan Rivers as one of their biggest influences.
We lost a comedy legend today. The great Joan Rivers passed away today. She was 81 years old. And besides being a pioneer for women in comedy, for everyone in comedy, Joan was a very lucky person because she loved her job so much. She never wanted to stop. And she didn't have to stop because she was still great at it.
She was just a money-making machine. She sold 12 best-selling books. 12 best-selling. I haven't read 12 books.
She is fearless. She would come out and just say what you were thinking, but you wouldn't say it. You would stop, but she wouldn't stop. She would just say it. And a lot of people thought, you know, that her humor was mean and stuff like that, but she just did it because she wanted to make everyone laugh. That's the goal. And she could take a joke just as easily as she could dish it out. One of the classist acts. I love her so much. Class act all the way.
And she stood behind her jokes, harder on herself than anybody, really. She would tell these god-awful jokes about herself. So she felt like, look, if I'm going to tell them about myself, then there are some other people out there that grow up. These are just jokes, ladies and gentlemen. And she, yeah, that's right.
What does your grandson want to do when he grows up? Does he know yet?
Right now, he's 10. He wants to be a football player. But, you know, stupid.
What do you want him to be?
Gay.
You want him to be gay?
I want him to be gay. Who else is going to give a damn that I knew Judy Garland? Grandma, tell me all about Judy Garland.
We had this bit where at the beginning of the show, I said, to my friend out there who said I couldn't host the Tonight Show, you owe me $100. Like De Niro, Tina Fey, you know, everyone did it. It was great. And Joan Rivers, we asked Joan to be one of the people. She came over to me and she started crying and gave me a kiss. It was really emotional and really nice.
I know that if she was here, she would want us to be here and be funny, and she'd probably want me to say, like, nice tie, who made it, Calvin Clown. I like that shirt. Does it come in men's? Oh my God, Jimmy, I love your hair. You have to tell me where you bought it. That's for you, John.
She will be missed, Joan Rivers. Time for traffic at 580. Kevin Miller in the morning. Currently right now, a chilly 47 in Nampa. Coming up, if you've missed our interview with John Rich, he'll be in town tonight. We'll have that. Plus, what happens when you bring a gun to work and it accidentally goes off? Uh-oh. Whew. The gun grabber's delight. But we'll get your reaction. Guns in the workplace, in Idaho, in America, anywhere. And plus, your thoughts on whether or not we need metal detectors at Bronco Stadium for tomorrow's big game. Certain safety or uncomfort because of campus carry. I'll explain next. Serving